Osho, the invitation. Responses to disciples' questions. Given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 7.
Beloved Bhagwan, how are one-pointedness, concentration, and meditation related to each other?
One-pointedness, concentration, and meditation are not related to each other at all. This is one of the confusions prevalent all over the world. One-pointedness is another name of concentration. But meditation is just the opposite of concentration. But in most of the books, in most of the dictionaries, and by the so-called teachers, they are synonymous. Concentration simply means one-pointedness. It is something of the mind. Mind can be a chaos, a crowd. Mind can be many voices, many directions. Mind can be a crossroads. Ordinarily, that's what mind is, a crowd. But if the mind is a chaos, you cannot think rationally. You cannot think scientifically. To think rationally and scientifically, you have to be concentrated on the object of your study. Whatever the object is, one thing necessary is that you are pouring your whole mental energy on that object. Only with this much force, there is a possibility to know the objective truth. Hence, concentration is the method of all sciences. But meditation is totally different. First, meditation is not of the mind. It is neither one-pointed mind or many-pointed mind. It is simply not mind. Meditation is going beyond mind and its boundaries. They cannot be related. They are opposite to each other. Concentration is mind, and meditation is no mind. The West particularly has not known meditation. It has remained confined to concentration. Hence all scientific progress, technology, but it has not known the inner science of silence, peace, of being a light unto oneself, one-pointedness can reveal the secrets of the outside world. Meditation reveals the secret of your own subjectivity. It can be said, concentration is objective and meditation is subjective. Concentration moves outwards, meditation moves inwards. Concentration is going far away from yourself, meditation is coming home to your innermost center. Because mind, reason, logic, all point towards the outer, to them the inner does not exist at all. But this is a fundamental law of the inner reality, that nothing is ever accomplished in the inner world by a reasonable man. It is an irrational, or better to say, suprarational approach. To know oneself, you don't need mind. You need utter silence. Mind is always concerned with something are many things. There are thoughts and thoughts, ripples upon ripples. The lake of the mind is never rippleless. And your inner being can be reflected only in a mirror without any ripples. No mind absolute silence of all thoughts. Absence of the mind completely becomes the mirror without any ripples, without even a single fluttering of thought. And suddenly the explosion. You have become aware for the first time of your own being. Up to now you have been knowing things of the world. Now you are knowing the knower. That's exactly what Socrates means when he says, know thyself. Because without knowing thyself, I want to add into the Socratic advice, you cannot be yourself. Know thyself is a step in being thyself. And unless you are yourself, you can never feel at ease. You can never feel contented. You can never feel fulfilled. You can never feel at home in existence. Some discomfort, some misery, you are not exactly aware what, but a constant feeling that something essential is missing. That you have everything and yet something which can make everything meaningful is absent. Your palace is full of all the treasures of the world, but you are empty. Your kingdom is big, but you are absent. This is the situation of the modern man. Hence the constant feeling of meaninglessness, anxiety, anguish, angst. Modern mind is the most troubled mind that has ever existed, for the simple reason because man has come of age. A buffalo is not disturbed about the meaning of life. The grass is the meaning of the life. More than that is all useless. The trees are not interested in the meaning of life. Just a good shower and a rich child and a beautiful son, and life is a tremendous joy. No tree is an atheist. no tree ever doubts, except man. Doubt does not exist in existence. Except men, nobody looks worried. Even donkeys are not worried. They look so relaxed, so philosophically at ease. No fear of death, no fear of the unknown, no concern for the tomorrow. It is only the man and his intelligence that has given him a very difficult life. A constant torture. You try to forget it in 1001 ways. But it goes on coming back again and again. And this will continue until your last breath, unless you know something of meditation, unless you know how to turn inwards, how to have a look of your own interiority, and suddenly all meaninglessness disappears. On a very high level, you are again as at ease as the trees. On a very high consciousness, you are as relaxed as the whole existence is relaxed. But your relaxation has a beauty to it. It is conscious. It is alert. It knows that it is. It knows while the whole existence is asleep, it is awake. And what is the point of a beautiful sunrise if you are asleep? What is the beauty of a rose if you are asleep? Mind is your sleep. Concentrated or not, meditation is your awakening. And the moment you awake, the sleep disappears, and with it all the dreams, all the projections, all expectations, all desires. Suddenly you are in a state of desireless, non-ambitious, unfathomable silence. And only this silence blossoms flower in your being. Only in this silence the lotuses open their petals. Remember that any teacher who says to you that concentration is meditation, is committing a great crime, not knowing he is misleading you. And misleading on such a fundamental subject that he is far more dangerous than somebody who can kill you. He is killing you far more significantly and deeply. He is destroying your consciousness. He is destroying your very possibility to open the doors of all the mysteries that you are. Albert Camus has one beautiful statement to remember. The absurd is the essential concept and the first truth. Naturally, when mind is not there, no mind cannot be a rational concept. It is absurd. It cannot say anything reasonably where it is, what it signifies. It can only indicate mystically. Hence all the parables of the world. The mystics could not say in a logical way what they have experienced. They went round about telling stories, parables, which can be understood on two levels, one of the mind and one of the no mind. That is the beauty of a parable. You can understand it just like any other story. But it was not meant just to be another story. It was meant to give you some hint, some hidden hint, towards that for which mind is absolutely inadequate. I will give you a few examples. A blind man is brought to Gautam Buddha. The blind man is not an ordinary man, he is a great logician. And his whole village is tired of his logic. And they are very much annoyed and irritated by the blind man, because he refuses that light exists. And he requires of the whole village, if you say that light exists, give me the proofs. I can touch things. Let me touch your light. I can taste things. Let me taste your light. I can smell things. At least let me smell your light. I can hear things. Beat the light so I can hear the sound. Do something. These are the only four senses I have. But light is not available to the nose, neither to the ear, nor to the mouth, nor to the hand. Unless you have eyes, there is no way to prove that light exists. Gautam Buddha said to the people that you have brought him to a wrong man. You have all given all kinds of proofs and you have not been successful. What can I do? You take him to my personal physician. He is just sitting behind me. He is the greatest physician of our time. Perhaps he can cure his eyes. He does not need any argument. He needs treatment. He does not need any evidence, logical proof about light. He simply needs eyes. And then there will not be any question or any doubt or any asking about evidences. He was given to the physician. It took 6 months for him. To cure that man from his blindness. The day he saw the light, he cried and went house to house in the village to ask for apology, that forgive me. Although I was being rational and logical, I had no idea that unless you have eyes, you cannot be given any proof that cannot be rejected by you, argued against. Although light exists, the whole world knows, but the whole world cannot make a single blind man convinced of it. Your consciousness is not available to the mind. Your mind is not the right vehicle to know yourself. Unless a new eye, what in the East we have called the third eye, symbolically, these two eyes open outwards Just as a symbol, the third eye opens inwards, the two eyes for the duality of the world, the one eye for the singleness of your being. As you start looking inwards, you are amazed that you were ignoring yourself, and that was the trouble, that you were in misery, anxiety, suffering. And you were trying everything to remove misery, but the misery was caused of your unawareness, of your unconsciousness, of about your ignorance of your own being. That was the cause, and unless that cause is removed, you will never have a taste of blissfulness, of ecstasy, of immortality, of the divineness of existence. The pretty young thing came slamming into her apartment after a blind date and announced to her roommate, "Boy, what a character. I had to slap his face 3 times this evening." The roommate inquired eagerly, "What did he do?" "Nothing," muttered the girl. "I slapped him to see if he was awake." But nobody is awake. Spiritually, we are all asleep. Meditation is a way of awakening. Concentration has nothing to do with meditation. But you have been told by Christians, by Hindus, by Mohammedans, by all your so-called organized religions, that concentrate on God, concentrate on a certain mantra, concentrate on the statue of a Buddha, but concentrate. And remember, whether you concentrate on a hypothetical God which nobody has ever seen, nobody has ever met, for which no proof, no evidence exists anywhere, you can go on concentrating on an empty hypothesis that is not going to reveal you yourself. Concentrate on a statue which is man-made, manufactured by yourself. You can go on concentrating. You will not find anything to transform your being. Or concentrate on scriptures, mantras, chanting. All those efforts are an exercise in utter futility. Go beyond the mind. And the way beyond the mind is very simple. Just become a watcher of the mind. Because watching immediately separates you from the thing you watch. You are watching a movie, one thing is certain, you are not an actor in the movie. Watching the road and the crowd passing by, one thing is certain, you are standing by the side, you are not on the road, in the crowd. Whatever you watch, you are not. The moment you start watching the mind, a tremendous experience happens, a recognition that you are not the mind. Just this small recognition that I am not the mind is the beginning of no mind. You have transcended the crowd, the voices, the chaos of the mind. You have moved into the silences of the heart. Here is your home, your eternal being. Here is your deathless essential existence. Knowing this, has never been transcended by anything more blissful, more ecstatic. You may have heard about Siegel's law. A man with one watch knows what time it is. A man with two watches is never sure. And mind is not only two, it is many. A man with mind is not sure of anything. He is doubtful about everything. He is unsure about everything. And a life of doubt and unsureness is not a life. You don't have any roots anywhere. And without roots, you cannot have flowers and you cannot become fruitful. Your life will remain barren, a desert where nothing grows. Two women in a train were engaged in an argument. At last, one of them called the conductor, "If this window is open," she declared, "I will catch cold and will probably die. If the window is shut," the other announced, "I shall suffocate." The two glared at each other. The conductor was at a loss, but he welcomed the words of a man who sat near. These were, "First open the window. That will kill one. Next, shut it. That will kill the other. Then we can have peace." That's what you have to do with your mind. If you want peace, peace that passeth all understanding,
beloved Bhagwan, I have tried to write questions to you, but it is impossible. When you were in silence, I became aware that your silence is an invitation for meditation. It is pure celebration. It is not a burden or a duty or a bother. It is a coming closer to you. It is joy. My heart is overwhelmed to sit at your feet. In deep love, I say, "Thank you, Bhagwan, for this invitation."
Divyam Sakar. There are no questions which are really of any significance, because the questions are asked by the mind, and the mind cannot find any answer. The answer is in the death of the mind. All the questions are in the mind, and the answer is beyond it. Hence, if you are intelligent, you will find it very difficult to write a question. People who go on writing questions are not very alert that these questions cannot be answered. Yes, you can be sowed away where you will find the answer, but nobody else can answer your question. Just as nobody else can breathe for you, and nobody else can drink for you, and nobody else can eat for you. You will have to do these things yourself. It is good that you felt it was impossible to write questions. It is impossible because the mind cannot even have any idea of the right question. Because to know the right question is to know the right answer. If you can recognize the right question, it is not far away to recognize the right answer. A mind that can recognize the right question is certainly capable of recognizing the right answer. But all your questions are wrong. And there are millions of questions, and there is only one answer. And questions are very complex, and the answer is very simple. The questions have created so many great philosophies in the world, so many great systems of thought, systems of belief. Great traditions of religion, but they none have come to the answer that fulfills. To the answer that dispels all the questions. Because the answer is your being, very being. The answer is not to be found in any scripture, nor it can be given by any teacher. Those who know never answer your question. They simply destroy your question. They make you aware of a quest, not of a question. Their invitation is for a quest, not for a question, because only a quest can lead you finally to the space where you find not a verbal answer, but an existential answer, yourself. A man stepped into a very crowded bus. After a while, he took out his glass eye, threw it up in the air, then put it back in again. 10 minutes later, he again took out his eye, threw it up in the air, then put it back in again, the lady next to him was horrified. "What are you doing?" she cried. "I'm just trying to see if there is any room up front with a glass eye." Your questions are just like that. And the more you would have tried, the more you would have found it is impossible. There is no question which is of any worth. But then you suddenly fall upon something for which you were not looking. "Because I was in silence, you thought perhaps that is my message to you, to be silent." And this invitation for silence became your meditation. And now you can say to me, "It is pure celebration. It is not a burden or a duty or a bother. It is a coming closer to you. It is joy. My heart is overwhelmed to sit at your feet in deep love. I say thank you, Bhagwan, for this invitation." Remember, Petrarch's law. Important things that are supposed to happen do not happen, especially when people are looking for them. When you are not looking for anything, a certain silence descends on you. And in that silence, things start happening that were never happening before when you were looking for them. It is a very mysterious life. It does not follow your ordinary arithmetic. When you are too much running after silence and peace and meditation and enlightenment, you simply get tired, bored, exasperated, it is never been found that way. Anything of value while you are running, you cannot find. And naturally your mind says, "Run a little faster. You are not running enough." And the faster you run, the more tense you are, the more your eyes are blurred, the more dust you gather, and you don't know where you are running because you don't know the direction where the truth is. It is not running after it. It is sitting silently. And while you are perfectly a pool of peace, truth arises within you. You never reach to truth. It is always the truth that reaches you. But you must be at your home. Mostly you are never at your home. I have heard about two men, great friends, talking to each other, and one said, "Boy, last night was the greatest thing that has ever happened to me. I had gone fishing, and such great fish that even to carry one alone by myself was so much tiring. It was such a burden. The fish was so long. You won't believe it. And not one. I caught so many fish. The whole night I had been carrying them. The man said, "This is nothing. You don't know what has happened to me the last night." I dreamt that on one of my side is Sophia Loren. In my bed, under my blanket. I said, "My God." I looked at the other side and I saw Marilyn Monroe. It was such a juicy night. The first man who had been catching fish the whole night said, "You idiot, why you did not call me?" He said, "I had called, but your wife said you have gone fishing." People are never at home. Truth comes many times and knocks at the door, but your wife says you have gone fishing. You are always gone somewhere. Sitting silently, you are at home. And truth is not something that comes from outside. It arises out of the intensity of your silence. In fact, intensity of your silence, a great silence crystallized, is truth. Truth is not something other than silence. a small silence becomes the door of greater silences, and finally the silence itself becomes so condensed Gurdjieff used to call it the crystallization. You find yourself, and in that very finding you have found the truth. Then life is a sheer joy, a song, a dance, a celebration.
Beloved Bhagwan, could you say something to me about fear? What is fear? Will meditation help me overcome my fear of death? Why am I afraid to let go into something more powerful than me?
Prem Subhu, you have asked many questions in a small single question, and all are significant. Significant for any seeker. First, you are asking about fear. There are many fears, but fundamentally they are only offshoots of one fear, branches of one tree. And the name of the tree is death. You may not be aware that this fear is concerned with death. But every fear is concerned with death. Fear is only a shadow. It may not look apparently. One is afraid of going bankrupt, but he is really afraid of being without money. One becomes more vulnerable to death. People go on holding money as a protection, although they know perfectly well that there is no way to protect yourself against death. But still, something has to be done. It at least keeps you busy. And keeping yourself busy is a kind of unconsciousness is a kind of drug. Hence, just as there are alcoholics, there are workaholics. They keep themselves continuously involved into some work. They cannot leave working. Holidays are fearful. They cannot sit silently. They may start reading the same newspaper they have read 3 times from the morning. They want to remain engaged because it keeps a curtain between themselves and death. But reduced to its essentials, the only fear is of death. And it is significant to realize that all other fears are only offshoots. Because then something can be done if you know the very root. If death is the basic and the fundamental fear, then only one thing can make you fearless, that is an experience within you of a deathless consciousness. Nothing else, no money, no power, no prestige, nothing can be an insurance against death, except a deep meditation, which reveals to you that your body will die, your mind will die, but you are beyond body-mind structure. Your essential core, your essential life source has been before you and will remain after you. It has changed many forms. It has evolved through many forms. But it has never disappeared. From the very beginning, if there has been any beginning, to the very end, if there is any end. Because I don't believe in any beginning and in any end. Existence is beginningless and endless. It has always been here, and you have always been here. Forms may have been different. Forms have been different even in this life. The first day you got into your mother's womb, you were not bigger than the full point on your question mark. If a photograph is shown to you, you will not recognize that this is me. And in fact, even before that, 2 persons were arguing about how far back they can go, how far back they can remember. one could remember his childhood near about 3 years of age. The other said, that's nothing. I remember the day my mother and father went to picnic. When we went to the picnic, I was in the father. When we came back from the picnic, I was in my mother. Will you recognize when you were in your father? A picture can be shown to you. It can be enlarged so that you can see it with your bare eyes, but you will not recognize it. But it is the same life form, the same life source that is throbbing in you right now. You are changing every day. When you were just born, just 1 day old, that also you will not be able to recognize. You will say, my God, this is me. Because everything will change. You will become old. Youth will be gone. Childhood has been lost long before. And death will come. But it will come only to the form, not to the essence. And what was changing all along your life was only the form. Just the other day, I looked at Chitin. I said, my God, what has happened to this poor man? Later on, I tried to find out. He has become a punk or what? He used to be a saint sannyasin. But nothing has happened to him, just to his hair, to his beard. He is the same, he is still sane. Your form is changing every moment. And death is nothing but only a change, a vital change, a little bigger change, a quicker change. From childhood to youth, you don't know when childhood left you and you became young. From youth to old age, things go so gradually. That you never recognize at what date, on what day, in what year, youth left you, The change is very gradual and slow. But death is a quantum jump from one body, from one form into another form. But it is not an end to you. You were never born and you never die. You are always here. Forms come and go, and the river of life continues. Unless you experience this, the fear of death will not leave you. You are asking, will meditation help me overcome my fear of death? There is no other way. Only meditation, and only meditation can help. I can say, all the scriptures can say, but that will not help. Still a doubt may remain. Who knows? These people may have been lying. Or these people may have been deceived themselves. Or these people were being deceived by other literature, by other teachers. And if a doubt remains, the fear will be there. Meditation brings you face to face to the reality. Once you know on your own what life is, you never bother about death. There are beautiful stories about people of meditation. How joyfully, how jokingly they have taken their death. One great master, before dying, asked his disciples, that you know me perfectly well, that I have lived always my own way. I want to die also in my own way. Just suggest some unique idea. The disciples said, this old man has tortured us whole life. Now what original idea about death? And people are afraid of death, and this fellow is asking, give me some original idea how to die. Somebody suggested, sit dying in a lotus posture. Somebody else said, this is not new. People have died sitting in lotus posture. Then the old man said, reject it. Find out something absolutely original and be quick, because my time is running. Somebody suggested, die standing. People usually die lying down on their bed. That is the most dangerous place. Because 90.9% people die on their bed. Beware of the bed. In the night when your wife has gone to sleep, slip down and sleep on the floor. move in the bathroom, but don't be on the bed. That is the place where death has found its 90.9% victims. Avoid it. But somebody said that this is a little new, but it is not absolutely original, because I have heard about a master dying standing. Just one man, but it is still imitating him. Then somebody said, then do one thing, stand on your head. Head stand. That we have never heard anybody dying. It is very difficult. Even to fall asleep standing on your head is very difficult, because so much blood is running in the head, it keeps you awake. Dying is much more difficult. In the night you keep your head on a pillow, so that less blood is reaching to the head. Otherwise the blood flow keeps your brain cells awake. Intellectual people need two pillows, three pillows. Then, with great difficulty, they can stop the rush of the thoughts. Now, standing on the head, so much blood, because of gravitation, goes to the brain. It won't let it fall asleep. Dying will be much more difficult, because death is a deeper form of sleep. But the old man said, I like that idea. Just be certain nobody has done it. All his disciples said, that's true. Nobody has ever done it. You can do it and feel happy that you are dying in an original way, in your own style. And the old man stood on his head and died. Then all the disciples became very much disturbed. What to do now? Because they had known people dying on the bed, then you give them a bath, you change their clothes, you take them to the funeral pyre. But what to do this fellow? He is standing on his head. Nobody has died this way, so nobody knows actually what should be done, from where to start. Somebody suggested his sister, his older sister, is also a great master. She lives in a nearby monastery. It is better to call her before taking any action, and later on being condemned that you should not have done that, they call the sister that what we are supposed to do. He had died standing on his head. The sister said, he has always been nasty. She was also a great meditator. she came close and told him that stop all this mischievousness. At the time of death, at least, don't be ridiculous, behave. And she pushed him. So he fell, poor man, laughing. The disciples said, this is strange. This old woman is also something. And she went back, telling him, then just go to the bed and die. Just as it is supposed to be done. Just do it properly. And I am not going to come again. And you fellows, don't be worried. Whatever way he wants to die, let him die. Just drag him to the funeral pyre. But the disciples said it was good we called. He was still alive. Naturally, it is very difficult to die standing on your head. The poor man tried hard. But could not manage, and finally, in the East, it is not right to disobey the elders, so he lay down on the bed and died. Then he said before dying that this time I'm really dying. You start your ritual. Still they watched, pinched, take every care because this man is strange. We had thought that he has died, and who knows, he may be still playing a joke. Death is a joke? We have been always so afraid. They pinched but found he was really dead. Another master, before dying, told to his disciples that, listen, I have already taken the bath, and I have changed my clothes, fresh, new, so you need not, after I am dead, don't try to deceive me. You are my disciples, you have to follow my order. After my death, no bath, no changing of clothes. I have already done before you. They said, yes, we are all witnesses. He said, then remember, nobody should interfere. They knew their master, that he is such a man that if you interfere, he may open his eyes. He has been beating them his whole life, and they did not want him to beat them again, even after death. So they simply followed, and what he has done, he has played the last joke. As the fire caught his body, firecrackers he has been hiding inside his clothes. That's why he did not want them to change his clothes. Firecrackers started exploding all around, beautiful. And people started laughing. They have never seen such a death. But the disciple said he was a man who could laugh at a death. because he knew there is no death. Only meditation is the way to discover your deathlessness. Then all fear disappears. All other fears also disappear, because they were just offshoots, branches, maybe gone too far away from the roots, but still they were connected with the roots. And finally you are asking, Subhuk, why am I afraid to let go into something more powerful than me? It is the same fear. All fear, all the same. You are afraid into going more powerful than you, because a dewdrop dropping in the ocean is bound to disappear. It is death to the dewdrop. The more powerful will absorb you. Hence the fear. But if you knew that your life is the greatest power in existence, there is nothing more powerful than it. Not even nuclear weapons can absorb it. Once you become certain about it, then the dewdrop knows it is not his disappearance in the ocean. It is the ocean disappearing in the dewdrop. It is the dewdrop becoming vast as the ocean. It is not disappearance. It is becoming infinite, unbounded. After Brezhnev's death, the Central Committee of the Communist Party met to choose his successor. After his unanimous election as General Secretary, Yuri Andropov, the former chief of the secret police, announced, "Very well, comrades, now that you have voted, you may lower your arms and come away from the wall." This was voting. Naturally, it was unanimous. Death is such a fear. But if you have just a small glimpse of your own being, then even in Soviet Union, death does not happen. When Khrushchev came to power, addressing the first meeting of the Communist Party, he condemned Joseph Stalin as strongly as possible. He said that at least 1 million Russians have been killed after the revolution by a single man, Joseph Stalin. Thousands are in madhouses, thousands are in jails, thousands are forcibly hospitalized. And thousands have been sent to Siberia for their whole life. They can't return back to Russia. And life in Siberia must be the hardest in the whole world. Just to survive. One man from the back said that, "Comrade Khrushchev, you have been a Central Committee leader with Joseph Stalin your whole life. Why you did not say it before?" There was great silence. Khrushchev said, "Whoever has asked the question is significant, and I am going to answer, but you first please stand up." Nobody stood. Khrushchev called 3 times, "Stand up, so can I see at least your face." But nobody stood, and nobody repeated the question. Khrushchev said, "Do you know why I was silent?" "Why you are silent?" "You know that if you stand up, you will disappear." "I knew that if I said anything against Joseph Stalin, I will not see another sunrise again. Death is such a fear. Even to Joseph Stalin, who was so powerful a man, death was such a fear that he never allowed his wife to sleep in the same room. Who knows? In the night she may make an effort on his life. Yes, she is his wife, but just by being wife does not mean anything. Everybody is a stranger in this world. Just by going to a registry office, you can't become known to each other. he never allowed anybody to be friendly with him. Nobody in his whole life ever put his hand on his soldier. That was not possible. He always kept people far away. Following the old rule of Machiavelli, that the most dangerous people to those who are in power are those who are closest. The vice president is the most dangerous to the president, because he is so close, the temptation is easy to push this man away in some way and capture the power yourself. These powerful people, Adolf Hitler or Joseph Stalin or Benito Mussolini, are as much afraid of death as anybody else. All their power makes no difference. Only very few people like Gautam Buddha or Bodhidharma or Chuang Tzu have been able to go beyond the fear of death. You can go beyond. It is within your power and it is your right. But you will have to do a small effort of moving from mind to no mind. Just a joke for you to remember at the time of your death. It seems there was a captain in the KGB whose stupid son had great difficulty understanding the concepts of the party, the motherland, the unions, and the people. The captain told the boy to think of his father as the party, his mother as the motherland, his grandmother as the unions, and himself as the people. Still the boy did not understand. In a rage, the father locked the boy in a barred room in the parental bedroom. That night, the boy was still in the wardrobe. When the father began to make love to the mother, the boy, watching through the wardrobe keyhole, said, "Now I understand. The party rapes the motherland while the unions sleep and the people have to stand and suffer. Okay, Vimal?
Yes, Bhagwan.